This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Dynamic Duo, where you can catch Kevin Barrett on Mondays and Fridays and occasionally substituting for me. I'm very glad to be back on live after having spent a week in Greece, where I was the featured guest of a 3.5-hour television program hosted by the leading investigative journalist in Greece, which was broadcast worldwide. It was a fascinating experience. And if we have the opportunity later in the program, I may discuss my experience there. I'm delighted to be back and especially to have as my special guest today Colonel Robert Bowman, who of the United States Air Force retired. He is the former director of the Advanced Space Projects Development Program under Presidents Ford and Carter. Notice that's under both Republican and Democratic administrations. This program is colloquially known as the Star Wars program, for, intercepting intercontinental ballistic missiles and the like. I hope we'll talk a bit about it, because it seems to me that Bob Bowman's background here has increasing relevance for our studies about what may have happened to the World Trade Center. In addition, he's an Air Force fighter pilot with over 101 combat missions. He's a former candidate for President of the United States, and most recently, he ran for the House of Representatives from a Florida district, although Bob did not win that race, very much to my regret. I think he picked up quite a lot of information about politics in relation to 9/11, which is a topic I want to discuss with him today. Bob, it's a great pleasure to have you on the Dynamic Duo. Welcome.
Thanks, Jim. Good to be with you again.
And I say, my friend, you gotta have gone through the ups and the downs of this political business down there in Florida. I lived in Sarasota for some 5 years, from around 1981 to 86. And, of course, I found the whole thing fascinating, so I was right in Sarasota. Now, that, I think, is north of your district, but I wish you'd tell us a bit about, you know, this campaign and how it went and all that.
Yeah, well, actually, it's due west of my district.
So are you on the Atlantic coast then?
I'm on the Atlantic coast. We're the eastern half of Central Florida, from Orlando to the ocean, from Disney World to the ocean.
So you include Orlando and Disney World in your district?
No, we...
Just south of it.
Well, just east of it.
Yeah, okay.
And, we cover four counties here. We have electronic voting machines, various kinds in various counties. And if it were not for those electronic voting machines, I might be a congressman today.
I'm certainly willing to believe that, Bob. The new studies are showing that the Democrats should have had an even more overwhelming victory, and we should have had as many as 50 members of the House instead of 32 or so, and that it was largely because the way that the tilt that Karl Rove had programmed into the voting machines was done a couple of weeks in advance of necessity, and that the huge tidal wave of one calamity after another affecting the Bush administration adversely was something they had not anticipated, so they simply haven't done enough to rig the machines to record the vote. Now, anyone who thinks I'm wrong on this just needs to look into it. Study after study is showing that these votes have been rigged, and it's happened in 2000, 2002, 2004. Go to my site, Assassination Science, for example, assassinationscience.com, for example, and you'll find a big red box entitled The Death of Democracy, and you'll find there are 10 or 12 different studies that were earlier than this election, okay? They all predate this election, demonstrating from a statistical point of view, the overwhelming evidence that these elections have been rigged to the tune of about 5% in every single case benefiting the Republican candidate. The companies that own those ties with the Republican Party, the situation is completely outrageous. Europeans think we're absurd, crazy, insane to allow the vote to be counted by private companies to one political party. And I think they're right, Bob. Don't you?
Absolutely. One of the pieces of legislation I took up to Congress before the election as part of my legislative agenda was a bill to outlaw all forms of voting which do not produce a paper ballot which can be counted, recounted, and audited as necessary.
I think that's absolutely right. We've got to get rid of these paperless ballots, which are made by many of the same companies, such as Diebold, that produce virtually flawless automatic teller machines that we find worldwide. When we were in Greece, Bob, we were able to use one of these ATMs, and it worked flawlessly. And, of course, we all know from our own experience that they're completely reliable. They do far more complicated transactions than merely adding a number one to a previous number in order to record a single vote as it's being tallied. The situation is completely absurd, totally corrupt. And if we can't get rid of these electronic voting machines, well, then we can blame ourselves for the catastrophic invalidation of our birthright, our precious birthright as citizens of the United States, namely the right to have our vote cast and to be counted.
Right. To show you how far the Republicans gone with this, in a couple of my counties here in this district, we have optical scan machines where the voter actually fills in a paper ballot by filling in the ovals next to the one they want to vote for. And then when they're finished making out their ballot, they put it into the machine, which reads what they have done and does the count. Now, of course, these, if you're familiar with the HBO special and whatnot, people will know these are subject to hacking as well and manipulation. But at least the paper ballots are there to be counted by hand.
Yeah.
However, in Florida, the headquarters of Election Fiasco, our Republican legislature saw fit, and Governor Jeb Bush signed a law which makes it illegal to count those paper ballots by hand. If there is a recount, all you are allowed to do is feed them through the machines again.
How blatant can this corruption get, Bob? I mean, you know, here you've got a disgusting guy who presents himself as a responsible individual, Jeb Bush, and he's acting as corruptly as anyone possibly could and betraying all the principles for which this country is supposed to stand. How can anyone take any Bush seriously? These people seem to me to be one of the most disgustingly corrupt families in the history of American politics.
Well, I can't disagree with you, Jim.
And there are book after book being written about this subject now. You know, we have Neil Bush and Marvin Bush and Jeb Bush and W.
Yeah.
For God's sake, what a cast of characters. And they're all perpetrating different kinds of crimes against the United States.
It was Marvin, I guess, who was responsible for security at the World Trade Center until shortly before 9/11.
That's right. Barbara Bush wrote in her own autobiography how the contract for Securicom, which was a company of which Marvin Bush was a member of the board of directors and whose chief executive officer was Wirt Walker III, a Bush cousin. Remember, W stands for Walker. Wirt Walker III was a chief executive officer who was a Bush cousin. She wrote how the contract by Securicom for security at the World Trade Center, Dulles Airport, and United Airlines expired the day after 9/11. Isn't that stunning? What a coincidence. Bob, it's just amazing how many coincidences we find here. It's just shocking. Now, before we get too far removed, I'm very interested, and I know our audience would like to hear about your experience during the campaign and how 9/11 was used to your disadvantage.
Well, yes. It was a brutal campaign. I was outspent 10-1, of course. But yet, I came closer than any Democrat in the last decade. And, there's some interesting things to tell about that campaign, and when we come back, I'd like to launch into it.
Terrific, Bob. We'll be right back with my special guest, Bob Bowman. This is your host, Jim Fetzer, on The Dynamic Duo. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Bob Bowman. We temporarily lost connection with Bob, so while it's being reestablished, I'd like to remind everyone that by special arrangement with Ted Anderson, we have a 1-800 number where you can order copies of articles and studies that you might find on any of the websites to which I am connected. Those include assassinationscience.com. If, for example, you would like to have copies of some of those studies by statisticians that prove that our vote has been rigged by using these electronic voting machines, you can call this number and ask them to send you a copy. It'll be postage paid by them. They may include some information about precious metals, which they're in the market for, but that you can pursue that or not as you may please. Another website is assassinationresearch.com, which many of you may not know is a journal for advanced study of the death of JFK. Advanced study in this case means it's for persons who already understand that there was a conspiracy involved here. And yet some of the very first studies demonstrate that conclusively. For example, there's a refutation of the lone nutter position that I authored, which brings together conclusive evidence that demonstrates that not only is the magic bullet theory, which is the foundation of the official government reports, including the Warren Report and the House Select Committee report when it reinvestigated the case in 1977-78, but also of Gerald Posner's book, Case Closed. This was the linchpin, the fulcrum upon which all else depended, the claim that a bullet entered the base of the back of the neck, traversed the neck without hitting any bony structure, exited at the throat, went into the back of John Connolly, shattered a rib, exited his chest, went into his wrist, and wound up in his left thigh. Demonstration that that's not only false, but provably false, and indeed is not even anatomically possible. So we can prove conclusively on the basis of objective scientific evidence that what the government has been telling us about Lee Oswald as a lone demented assassin is false. It's false. It's false, my friends. It's another of the big lies our government has been telling us. A lot of people believe that the corruption of the United States has gone massively downhill since 22 November 1963. I happen to think that's completely correct. If you can succeed in assassinating the President of the United States in broad daylight in front of hundreds of witnesses in a major city in the United States and then cover up the evidence, steal the body away, subject it to alteration by removing bullets that were embedded in the body, and then altering the x-rays and so forth, even recreating a whole movie of the assassination to deceive and mislead the American people, that's power, my friends. That's massive power. That's the power to manage and distort and conform the information you receive about any subject just the way the government wants you to understand it, which, of course, is what we've discovered in the case of 9/11. And that brings me to the third website where you can obtain information and studies and copies by way of this generous offer from Genesis. Namely, go to ST911.org. ST, that's Scholars Truth, ST911.org. And you will find studies and reports that appear there. And you can call this number. It's 1-800-360-8695. I repeat, 1-800-360-8695, and request copies of any of the studies at any of these three websites. They'll be sent to you complimentary, for free, no charge, postage, prepaid. But, of course, as everything else in America, we know nothing's quite completely free, so you may find some information there about precious metals. Genesis is very much involved with precious metals, so you may get some information, but you can examine it or not at your pleasure. The point is that Ted Anderson has generously agreed to send copies of these studies from any of those websites at your request by calling this 1-800-360-8695 phone number. So I encourage you all to do it. Is Bob back with me?
I'm back.
Oh, Bob, I'm just delighted.
We got cut off a couple of times.
I to say about some of these interesting events that occurred during your campaign, so we're all eager to hear.
Well, one of the things that happened that was rather devastating was that every single newspaper in the congressional district endorsed my opponent, even though most of them disagreed with his positions on all the issues, and everybody sort of sees him as a do-nothing congressman that simply voted however Tom DeLay told him to vote.
Well, something's got to be wrong there, Bob. Frankly, you are among the most distinguished Americans I've ever known in my life, and I've known some very high-quality individuals. You have a Ph.D. in aeronautics and nuclear engineering from Caltech. You've held one of the most sensitive positions in research and development in the United States in relation to the Star Wars program. You've been a past candidate for president. I cannot imagine why there would be a uniform decision to support the other candidate when your positions were superior to his across the board.
Well, I'll tell you why. Every one of those newspapers said it was because of my involvement with 9/11 Truth. And they branded me as a conspiracy nut and said that because of my involvement with 9/11 Truth, I had no credibility.
Well, if believing in a conspiracy makes you a conspiracy nut and having no credibility, then obviously George Bush, Donald Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, this guy who's our vice president, none of them must have any credibility, because the story they've sold us is the most fanciful, fantastic song and dance about 9/11 involving a conspiracy among 19 alleged Islamic fundamentalists under control of a guy in a cave off in Afghanistan that I've ever heard. I mean, it is, if you want to talk about outrageous beliefs unrelated to reality, there it is, Bob.
Well, of course. I mean, we know 9/11 was a conspiracy. The only issue is, who were the conspirators?
That's right.
The government says it was the 19 Arabs with box cutters and Osama in the cave. The FBI says there is no hard evidence tying Osama bin Laden to 9/11. And as far as the 19 Arabs, if they exist, we don't know whether they were hijackers or patsies.
Indeed, we have no evidence that they actually were even on the plane. Their names appear on none of the flight manifests. The stewardesses would not have been able to know where they were even sitting, which, of course, is responsibility for everyone who's aboard a plane. Even then, you had to show a photo ID as well as a boarding pass. The government has not even been able to produce the financial records that show who paid for the tickets. What are we to suppose, that Osama bin Laden put it on his MasterCard from his cave in Afghanistan?
And why, of course, did the head of the Pakistani ISI send the lead hijacker, Muhammad Atta, $100,000.
$100,000. Stand by, everyone. We're going to continue with my special guest, Bob Bowman. Jim Fetzer, this is the Dynamic Duo. I'm here with my special guest, Bob Bowman. Just listening to the Beatles makes me think of a gift I received for Christmas, namely this new CD called The Love, L-O-V-E. Any of you who are interested in, Beatles, the way I am, and love their music and their legacy, would really appreciate what George Martin, who produced most of their albums, has done here. So I just mentioned it in passing, thinking about music that means so much to so many of us. Here I have my special guest, Bob Bowman. And Bob, we're talking about how all the newspapers in your district, I mean, sounds like a stunning coincidence that every paper in your district should support this mediocre candidate just because he's willing to be more gullible than you are. And it makes me wonder, do people down there in Florida believe everything that the government tells them about tax cuts for the rich, about global warming, about reasons for going to war in Iraq? I mean, what's happened to the brain power down there in Florida? Has it all been sucked dry?
Well, it's not just here. It's all over. We had a lot of good 9/11 truth candidates for Congress all around the country, but I am the only one that actually won a major party primary and actually had a chance to win. So, the gullibility in Florida is no worse than anywhere else. Jim, are you still there?
Yeah, I sure am, Bob. I'm listening.
Okay.
It's just so shocking to me. I mean, what's wrong with truth? Don't we all want to know the truth about 9/11? And if there are all these wonderful reasons for doubting what the government has told us the truth, then it takes the most elementary understanding of physics, Bob, leads to the conclusion that what the government has told us can't possibly be correct.
You can't get that across to all the people. We in the 9/11 truth movement have failed to get our message across, and unfortunately the image we have as conspiracy theorist kooks is aided and abetted by the fact that all too often a lot of us act that way. Now, I am, something has to change if we're to make some progress in the next election. And I intend to run again, and I intend to win. But for that to happen, number one, we need to get paper ballots, and we're working hard on that.
Yes.
Number two, the 9/11 truth movement has to polish up its image a little bit. And one of the problems we've had is that within the 9/11 truth movement, there have been all of this going back and forth within the movement between people calling each other liars and idiots and agents provocateur and traitors. And, you know, with all this going on within the 9/11 truth movement, it's very hard to convince people that we're not a bunch of kooks.
Yes. Well, and of course, a lot of the alleged differences revolve around, you know, the scope of hypotheses being considered. It seems to me that, you know, while Steve Jones has done a lot of good by promoting the thermite-thermate hypothesis, the more I've studied the vastness of the destruction, the true demolition of the World Trade Center, we're not just talking about 1 and 2, but 3, 4, 5, and 6, in addition to 7, for which we have a separate explanation. I can see no possible way that a thermite-thermate explanation can account for all of this destruction. And therefore, Bob, I have been seeking to broaden the scope of our investigation from the point of view of scientific research. As you can appreciate, we cannot know that one alternative like thermite-thermate provides the best explanation unless we can establish that in relation to the alternatives. It's not possible to take one hypothesis independent of all of the available alternatives and determine whether or not it is the best. So we have to broaden our scope of consideration to include things that maybe sound fantastic but deserve objective scientific consideration on their own merits, which might include, for example, mini nukes or directed energy weapons or HARP. I'm sure you're an expert in that area. And that needs to be taken into account if we're to come up with an adequate explanation of the phenomena. So I have sought to do that and been assailed for it, because the opinion of some people is that if the world even knows that we're thinking about the full range of possible alternatives, that we're going to be dismissed on that basis. And my rejoinder is, look, there are two different issues involved here. One is demonstrating that the government's account is indefensible. We have done that in spades. Anyone who wants to go to st911.org, just go up to the top of the website and look at Why Doubt 9/11, where I've enumerated 15 basic findings that demonstrate the government's account is not only false, provably false, but can't possibly be correct because it violates laws of physics, of engineering, and of even of aerodynamics in relation to the alleged trajectory at the Pentagon. And I'm quite confident, Bob, that you are thoroughly familiar with all of this and would agree with me across the board here. Then there's the whole other question, which is far more challenging and complex, to figure out what actually happened, how it was done, because it was done in a very ingenious fashion. I suspect multiple forms of causation were involved. Thermite-thermate may have been a partial contributor, but it certainly can't explain the whole of it. It can't explain, in my opinion, the pulverization of the top 80% or so of the buildings. Even Steve Jones admitted to me that in relation to the South Tower, when you watch those top 30 floors start to tilt and turn and so forth, all of a sudden they disappear. Steve Jones himself admitted that to me. And to the best of my knowledge, there's utterly no way in which thermite or thermate could possibly account for it. Now, doing real science can be messy, controversial, antagonistic. Anyone who wants to understand the nature of real science should read the book The Double Helix by Jim Watson, who together with Francis Crick discovered the double helix structure of the DNA molecule, one of the great findings in the history of science. And you'll discover how much personal ambition, psychological motivation, vanity, and a desire for fame and so forth can actually affect real scientists doing real science. But just because it can be messy and controversial doesn't mean it doesn't have to be done. And in my opinion, it's far more appropriate to be open that we're investigating this while emphasizing, and this is what I say to the activists, they should emphasize all of the disproofs of the government, what the government's been telling us is false and is provably false across the board. And this go on to add, and of course we're also trying to figure out what happened, but that's a real messy business, as is the case with real science. I mean, that's
right.
Where I stand.
Well, you know, and I have no problem with people investigating possible ways that it could have happened. But we must bear in mind that this conjecture on ways that it could have happened is not the kind of thing that we have to prove. For one thing, we do not have subpoena power. We do not have the access that a truly independent investigative commission would have, one that has the power to call people to sworn testimony up public testimony up to and including the President of the United States, because that's really what is needed. And you see, the government has stated officially that they know how it happened, and they've told us how it happened. And it's their job to prove their conspiracy theory. It's not our job to prove ours.
And we have disproven their conspiracy theory in dozens of ways. Please stand by. We'll be returning with my special guest, Bob Bowman. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder on Mondays and Fridays. Today, I have as my special guest, Bob Bowman, a distinguished American, former candidate for President of the United States, most recently for the United States Congress in Florida. And Bob's been filling us in on some of the issues he encountered down there and where 9/11 was used as a club to bash him politically. And we're talking about some of the subtleties about the politics of 9/11. Bob, my concern is two or threefold. I mean, one is, I think as far as establishing that the government's account is indefensible, we have done that. We have done that over and over. We've done that to the point that actually most Americans, according to the latest New York Times CBS poll, are skeptical about the 9/11 Commission to the extent that 53% don't think it's right, 28% reject it outright. That's 81% reject the 9/11 Commission report. Only 16% believe it's true. 3% don't know enough to take a stand. Now, that seems to me evidence that we have accomplished our goal of getting the word out so that the most Americans are now profoundly skeptical about 9/11. Second of all, there's an almost irresistible temptation, if you think you know how it was actually done, to latch onto that and use that as proof that the government's wrong. Steve Jones' work on thermite seems to me have been almost irresistibly tempting to an awful lot of people to conclude that that's the proof the government's wrong. That, however, in my opinion, is a fundamental mistake. The proof that the government is wrong is 15 other reasons that have nothing to do with thermite and thermate, and yet there's an almost irresistible temptation to latch on to that. And if I'm right, that there actually isn't any possibility that the thermite-thermate hypothesis can explain all of the data that we have to explain, the massive damage, not just to the pulverization, the destruction from the top down to buildings 1 and 2, but what happened to 3, 4, 5, and 6, then to prematurely conclude that thermite-thermate is the answer when it, in my opinion, will turn out not to be the answer at all is a sure recipe for destroying the 9/11 movement. And third, there's, of course, a tremendous quest, scientific curiosity to know how this was actually done. We're talking about one of the great mysteries, one of the great hoaxes, one of the great perpetrations of deceit and deception in world history, right here before our very eyes, right here in New York City at the Pentagon and at Shanksville. Now, I think there are a lot of serious people, and it's certainly, I include myself here, who want to know how it was done. So, I mean, I can't imagine curtailing research on how it was done. I have never committed myself to any alternative hypothesis. It has been said that I have, but it's false. Anyone who watches the whole presentations where I discuss these matters, I've been simply impressed with the overwhelming devastation to the entire World Trade Center, 3, 4, 5, and 6, in addition to 1 and 2. And I have said over and over again, we have to broaden our range of alternative possibilities in order to explain this, to include, for example, mini-nukes, directed energy weapons, even HARP. That is what I have said. I have endorsed the possibility they were used. I have not endorsed one or another. It has been falsely alleged that I have concluded or committed myself to one or another of these, but that is false. Now, you know how much your positions have been distorted. I'm just telling you it's equally true of me within the 9/11 community, and I could start naming names of people who have distorted my position. And it can't be the case. It's because they're interested in truth. They have some political agenda, Bob, just as those who are opposing you had a political agenda of their own.
Well, that's certainly true. All I'm suggesting is that we in the 9/11 Truth Movement, as we, you know, do our research into alternative ways that it could have been done, and, you know, people are looking into, there weren't any airplanes really, it was holograms, and, you know, the research into what really hit the Pentagon, and you know, Barbara Honegger with the explosives that happened before the airplane hit, and all of these things. We have to be, and of course the thermite-thermate, I think we have to be very careful that we make it very clear that these are put out as possibilities to be investigated by an independent commission, and not our proposal that this is how it happened and we're hanging our hat on it because, you know, we can get ourselves in trouble that way.
Well, and I couldn't agree more. I think that's really right.
But
Bob, you know how easy it is to have your own words distorted. You know during this campaign that many of your positions were misrepresented grossly, even in some cases, by the opposition.
Absolutely.
And therefore that we cannot have complete control over what others are going to say is supposed to be our view.
That's right. And when people do not only distort but disparage the views of others in the 9/11 truth movement, then I think it makes us all look bad.
Well, I couldn't agree more. It does. On the other hand, I think there's a necessity to, you know, understand the nature of science. I mean, premature fixation on one possible hypothesis, such as thermite, is not practicing good science. And even though some of those who want to defend that approach claim to have some kind of privileged access to scientific method, I can assure you, Bob, and this is an area of my own expertise, holding a PhD in the history of science and the philosophy of science and having published many books and many articles on the nature of scientific reasoning, premature closure on a single hypothesis to the exclusion of other alternatives is the very antithesis of science. It defeats science. It is a roadblock to scientific inquiry.
And I agree with that completely. And to say that this one is the answer that we're holding, that we depend on, when that does get shown to be false, then we're in real trouble.
Well, my understanding is even that the idea that this is both an incendiary, a good steel cutter, but also great for pulverization is contradictory, because an incendiary requires focused energy in a single direction. It's directional. Pulverization requires energy going out in multiple directions. So my understanding is it's not even a coherent concept, though I'd be delighted to have further information about it to sort it out. I'm saying thermite may have played a role here. It wouldn't surprise me, but I'm inclined to believe that the top 80% of the buildings were pulverized by other means requiring a massive source of energy, and that perhaps the last 20 floors were brought down by more conventional means, such as thermite, to create the impression that they had actually collapsed when, in fact, they were destroyed from the top down. So this was very clever. And while you've been campaigning, you may be unaware of recent research by Craig Furlong and Gordon Ross entitled Seismic Proof 9/11 Was an Inside Job, where they have followed up Willie Rodriguez's observations that the explosions in the sub-basement preceded the impact of the plane in the case of the North Tower, and they have taken seismic data from Columbia University, which gives very exact information about the seismic effects that were taking place in relation to the FAA data and radar data, also very exact about when the planes impacted the building, and they have determined that the explosions in the sub-basement occurred as much as 14 to 17 seconds before the planes hit the building. Now, that's good work, in my opinion. In fact, it's completely brilliant, and it's elegant, and it's simple, and it provides some of the most important evidence we have that 9/11 was an inside job. And anyone who's interested in this should call that number I told you, get that 1-800 number I mentioned, and call in to get a copy of Seismic Proof 9/11 Was an Inside Job. And it's on st911.org. You'll find it there. And I encourage everyone to pursue that. I don't know, Bob, if you had a chance yet to take a look. That number, that 1-800 number again, is 360-8695. Seismic Proof 9/11 Was an Inside Job. Brilliant study. It's not very long. It's very simple. It's quite elegant and powerful. I don't know, Bob, if you'd run across that yet. Had you?
Yes, I have.
Oh, good. Excellent. And please, don't you agree that it's an elegant proof?
Well, again, I haven't gone through in detail, and because I haven't seen the basic source material, I'm not ready to say that it is the definitive answer.
But with the qualification that if the original sources substantiate their representation, then you would agree that it's a powerful proof.
Yes.
This is my special guest, Bob Bowman. We'll be right back on the Dynamic Duo.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where Kevin is on Mondays, Fridays, and occasionally substituting for me with my special guest today, Bob Bowman, who used to direct the Star Wars program and for both Democratic and Republican administrations. Bob, something that has puzzled me is how there can be internal criticism within the movement to, as it were, kind of blot out or not be willing to consider a kind of closed-mindedness to alternative explanations that might range from mini-nukes to directed energy or to HARP or even solar energy to explain what happened, when this is the very same kind of closed-mindedness that we find or found from the American public in general that we had to overcome to even look at what happened in 9/11 by looking at the evidence. I mean, it seems to me if you're not willing to look at the evidence, you have no place in the 9/11 movement because it's all about looking at the evidence. So we have to overcome the closed-mindedness of the public and, you know, aided and abetted by the government and the mass media, and that's our whole task. So I can't understand why we would want to transport those closed-minded attitudes in internal to the 9/11 movement itself.
Well, that I agree with that. My point was that we can present alternative ways that it could have happened. We don't have to prove them. It's not our responsibility to prove how it happened.
Right.
All we have to do is show that so far we have not been told the truth.
Right.
And that by itself is enough to get us a new independent commission which can find out precisely how it happened and who did it.
Except, of course, if it's got anything to do with the government, it's going to be politically tainted, just as the reinvestigation of the death of John F. Kennedy was tainted and came basically to naught. I mean, it's got to be a truly independent investigation, maybe by an international group of scientists and experts, Bob. I don't think anything that, you know, is contaminated by this government the way the 9/11 Commission investigation was tainted, even to the extent of putting a Bush inside insider in charge, Philip Zelikow, could possibly be expected to deal objectively with the scientific issues.
Well, that's why the legislation which I presented to Congress to set up an independent commission said that in addition to oversight by Congress, that there should be oversight by the 9/11 truth movement and by the families of victims.
Do you have a specific sense of how that would work? Meaning, I mean, there are a lot of views out here in the 9/11 truth movement, you know. My view might differ from Steve Jones' view, which might differ from, you know, Janice Matthews' view, which might differ from, you know, A, B, C, D. We could go down the list. So, I mean, how does that 9/11 involvement work?
Well, I think we need to, it may be, you know, a cross-section of people, but, and each of them could see that the possibility that they raise is not ignored, but basically it's to make sure that we don't get another whitewash. That's why, you know, maybe getting the Jersey girls involved in the oversight.
I mean, it seems to me what happened to you politically was a political smear and a whitewash. I mean, you're simply interested in the truth, and a man with your impeccable credentials, Bob, who could possibly be better positioned to take on this issue of what actually happened on 9/11 than you? I cannot think of anyone better positioned than you.
Well, whoever it is, and of course, I was hoping to be able to take it on as a member of Congress.
Let me ask you this question, too. Actually, I've been very eager to have a conversation with you about this topic. We all know about the concept of full-spectrum dominance, where the United States is supposed to be taking control of space as well as air, land, and sea. I mean, this is very important. The neoconservatives are very big on it. They're very big on space-based weaponry. I cannot imagine, with all the attention and all the funding that has undoubtedly gone into the black budget to support space-based weaponry, how anyone could rule it out without actually considering seriously the possibility that some space-based form of weaponry might have been involved in 9/11 as an hypothesis. Can you think of any reasonable grounds for ruling it out as an hypothesis?
No, I can't. I personally don't think it's very likely because the for one thing, we don't have weapons in space that have been acknowledged, and therefore we have not had weapons in space that have been tested, demonstrated. It's hard to...
Well, you don't actually know that. You're basing that upon your past experience and what has or has not been acknowledged. When I did a study of the death of Paul Wellstone, for example, I discovered that the hypothesis that explained all the data was that a directed energy weapon was used to overwhelm the electrical system, flip the solenoids on the props, and turn them onto no forward thrust, guaranteeing the plane would crash. I have lots of substantiating evidence for that, Bob. In the course of doing that research, which was principally conducted in 2003 and 2000, I discovered there are whole families of directed energy weapons. I discovered there's a whole professional society devoted to professional energy weapons, which in the year 2004 was having its 10th annual meeting in Hawaii that year.
Yeah, right, right.
So, I mean, you know, people who just rule this out because it defies the boundaries of their imagination or their limited knowledge and understanding here, to me, are just, it's inexcusable. You know, it's intellectually irresponsible. We have to face up to the full range of possibilities.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anything should be ruled out. I have had people ask me, did I think space weapons did it? And what I said is, you know, I don't know. I would rather doubt it. It's possible they could have played some role, but I think because of what happened and what we have on videotape to those buildings, that the aircraft that hit them and weapons from space could not be the sole answer, in my judgment. There had to be, it seems to me, some terrestrial component, whether it's a mini-nuke or whatever. I don't know.
Yes, yes, but you're not saying, you're saying it could be the case, and based upon your situation and odds, you think it's not likely to be the whole explanation, correct?
Right. Right.
And it's been how many years since you were actually directly involved in Star Wars research? 10 or 20?
I'm sorry?
How long has it been since you were involved in Star Wars research?
Well, I actually directed all that research until 78. So that's been, 28 years?
Right, right, right. And
however,
of course, a great deal can have happened in the 28 years since.
Yes. I was intimately involved after that, throughout the 80s.
Yes. Let me ask you a question, Bob. You know, you know this Oklahoma City thing, this Murrah building, which was, in my opinion, one of the most massive concrete reinforced structures I've ever seen in my life. Do you think in your wildest dreams of that kind of, fertilizer bomb could have caused that massive destruction to that building?
I don't know that much about fertilizer bombs. It does seem unlikely.
Hey, we'll be right back with my special guest, Bob Bowman. This is Jim Kessler. The show is the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today, Bob Bowman, who has a PhD in aeronautics and nuclear engineering from Caltech. Bob, I was actually born in Pasadena, so Caltech was right in my backyard.
Yeah.
He has been a candidate for President of the United States, most recently for the House of Representatives from a congressional district in Florida, and we're talking about the politics of 9/11 and Star Wars research in relation to 9/11. And Bob, I just have, a couple questions I'd like to ask you about this.
Okay, first, I got to say, I'm going to have to run, so this is going to have to be my last segment. I do want to tell people about two websites,
please,
because we're not going to be able to answer all the questions.
Sure.
One is my campaign website, which has my position on every conceivable issue, including 9/11, the North American Union, all sorts of things. And that website is Bowman2008.com.
Excellent. And was there another website you wanted to mention?
Yes, the other one is a website that I have had for many years, and it has articles I have written on Star Wars, on the First Gulf War, a lot of things that aren't directly connected with my campaign, and that is rmbowman.com.
Now, just so everybody knows, I mean, you had advised me before we went on the show that you might not be able to stay for the whole program, so I don't want anyone to draw the faulty inference that because we're asking, you know, we're talking about these issues, that that has caused you any concern. I know you would prefer to stay and discuss these things further.
Yeah, I only intended to stay an hour, but it's been an hour and a half.
Well, I'm delighted that you have been able to stay longer, Bob. Let me ask you two questions. One is this. Isn't it the case that our knowledge of military technical developments tends to lag about 10 or 20 years behind the actual development of those weapons? The public knowledge tends to be delayed about 10 to 20 years behind the development of weapons.
Well, at one time that was the case. The development of weapons takes a lot longer now, and public knowledge tends to not lag as far behind, perhaps in years, but not in the development itself. I noticed that quite a bit. There are systems that have yet to be deployed that I was working on in the 1970s.
Yes. Of course.
So
whether they might have been deployed is something you might not be abreast of today. I mean, just because you're no longer in the loop.
Well, but I have been only out of the loop for 10 to 15 years.
Right.
And I was in the loop for like 30, so I have an idea how far the loop has gotten.
Let me ask you the most general question. I mean,
yeah.
There's all this enthusiasm about the militarization of space. Bush has specifically disavowed a treaty into which the United States has entered against the militarization of space. How can we pursue a full-spectrum dominance if we don't have weapons that are space-based that we could deploy? What would be the point?
Well, certainly there is a desire on the part of neocons to weaponize space. First of all, militarization of space occurred long, long ago and cannot be undone.
By what do you mean? What? The use of satellites, spy satellites and the like?
Right.
Or are you talking about actual weapons that can be deployed from space?
Military communications. So, militarization of space is one thing. Weaponization of space is quite another. And what I was about, with the assistance of the Joint Chiefs of Staff throughout the 1980s, was an attempt to prevent the weaponization of space.
Well, that was a very different attitude, though, that we find prevalent in this administration.
Well, it wasn't the administration at that time, because Reagan was all for weaponizing space. The crazies who were advising Reagan, by the way, are the same crazies that are pulling George W. Bush's strings.
Well, this is the problem there, Bob. I mean, you've got a bunch of crazies in there who not only, pursue this project for the new American century, but want to weaponize space, and who knows how far they may have gone in doing so. I mean, when you have $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon budget, who knows where in God's name that may have gone.
Right, right. And that's true. It's these same crazies that are doing it now that were doing it then and wanting to weaponize space, and the Joint Chiefs at that time fighting them, saying, calling me in and saying, Bob, for God's sake, we can't say anything, we can't write anything, there's gag orders, you have to help us, you have to warn the Congress and the American people and stop this military lunacy.
Mind you, I have read documents that were at least 20 years old that were very enthusiastic about full-spectrum dominance, about putting weapons in space and denying any other country the right to put their own weapons in space so we can control the entire globe from space. Very enthusiastic documents, Bob, that came from official military sources. I've read them.
Absolutely, and I have too, And some years ago I was involved with the people who were putting those out, and some of it had reality in the black programs because I used to be involved in the black programs. Some of it was is sort of pie in the sky, wishful thinking, pipe dreams. It's a combination of reality and smoke and mirrors.
The reason I brought up the mirror building in Oklahoma City, Bob, is that for all we know, that could have been a proof of concept exercise using a space-based weapon to destroy the building, using the fertilizer bomb as a subterfuge. Even the most elementary physics, you know, you reveal that most energy follows the path of least resistance. That was outside this massive building. The vast majority of that energy would have dispersed outward into space. There was nothing surrounding most of that fertilizer bomb on most of its periphery. I mean, most of that energy would have gone outward, away from the building, not inward into the building. And that was a massive structure.
Yeah, well, I think there is an... It's also a possibility that there were preset explosives in that building as well.
Well, Bob, listen, I know you got to take care of other matters. I just want to thank you so much for coming on, and I wish you well in future campaigns, and I consider you to be a great patriot and a stand-up guy on behalf of 9/11 Truth, and I'm very appreciative for you coming on the show.
Thanks, Jim. We'll see ya.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Stand by. It's been my pleasure to have on as my special guest Bob Bowman, who was the director of Star Wars Research Program in both Republican and Democratic administrations. He's a stand-up guy. He was a candidate for Congress. He's been a candidate for president in the past. And I think what at the very least we must derive here is that whether or not space-based weapons might have been involved is not a question that we're well positioned to answer. Let me just explain why I think we have to be open-minded about alternative kinds of weaponry that we might think sound exotic. When I undertook my investigation of the death of Paul Wellstone, which began the day he died, the 25th of October 2002, I was eventually led to a whole series of discoveries about what was taking place here and about peculiarities related to the investigation of the crash. For example, that the FBI showed up preternaturally fast. The FBI was Johnny on the spot, was keeping reporters and photographers away from the crash scene. It was really quite striking because you'd think the more photographs, the better, the more evidence you have, the more potential there is to capture some isolated little piece of evidence that might make a difference. The plane was burned to charcoal, the fuselage. Now, that's fascinating because the tail broke off and the wings broke off as the plane was descending through a thicket of trees. And most of the fuel for the plane is located in the wings. So that meant most of the fuel was actually separate from and not destroyed with the fuselage. So the fuselage burns such that if you look at photographs of the destruction that remained, it's absolutely stunning. There's nothing but charcoal. And you begin to appreciate why the fire burned with such intensity for some 7 hours that they weren't even able to remove any bodies that day. In fact, they only discovered the remains the following day when they were searching through the wreckage for the cockpit voice recorder. Okay? Now, that's kind of stunning. If you want to understand what I'm talking about, and this is absolutely worth your while, go to assassinationscience.com and scroll down. There's a lot of stuff about Wellstone there, and you'll learn something about statements I gave about the case of the National Press Club when we released a co-authored book on the case, American Assassination, the strange Death of Senator Paul Wellstone, co-authored with Four Arrows, Don Jacobs, a Native American scholar from Northern Arizona University. And you'll find also a study I did subsequently with a PhD in electromagnetism by the name of John P. Costella, who I flew all the way up from Australia in order to help me investigate this case, because I became convinced that the most probable explanation for what happened was that the plane had been taken out using a high-tech directed energy weapon that would overwhelm the electrical system. I mean, these weapons can have all kinds of effects, up to and including rendering those who are hit by them unconscious, incapable of voluntary muscular activity, or even dead. But in this case, it appeared the most probable way in which the plane was taken down was once it was lured into the kill zone, and this is always the key, as in the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and as other experts will tell you, getting the target into the kill zone is the key part. That's the tricky part. Once you get them in the kill zone, then taking them out with a prearranged plan is a piece of cake, as a rule. Now, in this case, it appears as the directed energy weapon was able to overwhelm the electrical system and call these solenoids, these are electrical switches, to flip that controlled the pitch of the props. They put the props on idle, and the plane, would having no forward thrust, would inevitably crash. Okay, now that can't account for this fire of the fuselage that turned the fuselage to charcoal. But the point is, a directed energy weapon falls within the sphere of expertise of a guy who's got a PhD in electromagnetism, which is true of John P. Costello. So I flew Costello up from Australia, and he and I were tramping around the crash site at 35 below weather. I'll tell you, that's not fun at all. I'm talking 35 below Fahrenheit in Minnesota in the winter, and looking for pieces of refuge and, you know, pieces of the wreckage and all that. And we found ample pieces of the wreckage and so forth. But the fact of the matter is, they weren't even able to find the bodies until the next day. And yet that night, the FBI announced that there was no evidence of terrorist involvement. Well, the NTSB itself would not conclude its investigation for over a year as to what had caused the crash. So how could the FBI on the day of the crash be announcing there's no evidence of terrorist involvement when you don't even know what caused the crash? How can you know, if you don't know what caused the crash, how can you possibly know the motives of those who might have caused the plane to crash that way? Would it be or not be terrorists? This is absurd. I made the same point to a reporter out of Houston when they had a refinery fire down there, and he was saying how the FBI on the spot was saying that there were no signs of terrorist activity, and yet they did not know the cause of the refinery fire. So I wrote the guy, I said, look, I said, you know, they're playing a game with you. How can they know that the terrorists weren't involved if they don't even know the cause of the fire yet? And he came back rather sheepishly and explained that I had a good point. It's just like the FBI showing up. They showed up so fast that I did a backwards calculation. The only way the FBI could have been there by noon was to have taken off from an airport in St. Paul to fly to Duluth and then drive up there at the same time the senator's plane took off from another airport down in St. Paul. I mean, this is outrageous, completely outrageous. And then the NTSB just went right along with the FBI song and dance. A woman named Carol Carmody was in charge of the NTSB investigation. No one is supposed to be investigating one of these crash scenes unless an NTSB official is present, but yet this was the case. The FBI was there for like 8 hours in advance. I was very upset with their investigation because they didn't consider any non-accident alternatives. All they considered were the planes, the pilots, and the weather. And the weather was just fine, although it was grossly exaggerated by national figures like Wolf Blitzer. The plane was like the Rolls-Royce of small aircraft, and it had a wonderful maintenance record. The pilot, the principal pilot, Richard Conner, had 5,200 hours of experience. He had an air transport pilot, which is the highest civilian certification qualification. And he passed his FAA flight check 2 days before the fatal flight. So even by the government's own standards, this guy was eminently qualified. The NTSB never considered the possibility that it had been sabotaged, that it might have been a small bomb, a gas canister, or, say, some kind of high-tech weapon. They never even considered it. Why? Well, it turns out it's an NTSB policy that unless the Attorney General declares that a crash scene is a potential crime scene, it can't be investigated as a crime scene. So it's real simple. If you have a complicit or compliant Attorney General, all he has to do is decline to declare that it's a possible crime scene and it cannot be investigated as a crime scene, and the NTSB only then considers accident-compatible alternatives. It's so brilliant in its simplicity, I can't believe it. This is one of the findings that we uncovered in the course of our investigation. Plus, of course, and this is also fascinating, it turns out NTSB reports cannot be used as evidence in courts of law. And I say, well, what in God's name is the function of this? And you have to stop and consider these presidential commissions, like the Warren Commission on JFK and the 9/11 Commission on the, you know, what happened then. These are just advisory to the president. In my opinion, so far as I can tell, they have no legal standing whatsoever. So it's another con job on the American people. You got this big fancy, you know, commission, and they look at it, and you got a lot of, you know, bigwigs here on the commission. But of course, they're people so busy that they're completely overwhelmed. They couldn't possibly actually study all this stuff themselves. So they're at the mercy of their staff. This happened in the case of the Warren Commission. It happened in the case of the 9/11 Commission. And of course, the guy who's calling all the shots with this fellow Zillicow, inside insider, determining what's important, what's unimportant. How do the staff members actually know any better? They don't. None of them are scientists. Hell, Zelikow isn't even an historian, and he's not a scientist. Zelikow is an expert in the creation and promulgation of political myths. That's right, boys and girls, you heard it right. He's an expert in the creation and promulgation of political myths. What a perfect guy to perpetrate a hoax on the American people than an expert in creating them. I was so shocked by this when I went to Wikipedia and started reading about his background that I saved the page and put it on st911.org. So if you scroll down the left-hand side, you can now find a Wikipedia section there which includes this guy's role, his background, his history as a creator and perpetrator of political myths. He's an expert in the area of the creation and perpetuation of political myths. That's what he is. Stand by. We'll be right back. This is your host, Jim Fetzer, on the Dynamic Duo, talking with Bob Bowman about the politics of 9/11, and it's a tough and dirty business, how he was being attacked by every newspaper in his district because he wants to find out the truth about 9/11. I cannot think of a greater form of respect for the dead, those who died on 9/11, to find out how and why they died, something the government has miserably failed to accomplish. We know from George Bush himself that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11 in response to a reporter's question. You know what we know from the Senate Intelligence Committee? That Saddam was not in cahoots with al-Qaeda, but rather was pursuing its leaders, incarcerating and probably killing them. We also know, thanks to the brilliance of Ed Haas in consulting the FBI when he discovered a wanted poster for Osama bin Laden, said nothing about 9/11, that the FBI acknowledges as early as June that it has no hard evidence tying Osama bin Laden to the events of 9/11. Well, if Osama didn't do it, and if Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with it, then who was responsible? I think when you start searching the possible candidates who had motive, means, and opportunity, it's not very difficult to, that your focus of attention should lead to high officials in the American government and of at least one other nation that viewed this as a great opportunity. And, of course, I'm talking about Israel, which has benefited more from 9/11 than any other nation. Israel had the greatest motive and desire to have American forces in the Middle East to be destructive of Iraq and eventually of Syria and eventually of Iran, to leave Israel as the absolutely unopposed, unchallenged, the dominant force in the Middle East. And now we're in there and we're slaughtering young American men and women, more now than died on 9/11 in the godforsaken policy that was misconceived from the beginning, in which a president doesn't even acknowledge is at fault, where his own limited intellectual abilities clash with reality. If you want to talk about somebody who has no contact with reality, it's not we who are seeking the truth about 9/11. It's the president and Donald Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney and the others who brought us into this godforsaken mess. Now, doing research on 9/11 to find out what's going on is tough business. And you don't have the intellectual ability for it, then stay out of the kitchen. It's just fine for activists to pursue the issue of showing that the government's account is false. We have proven that in spades. You can go to the ST911 website and you can find over and over and over and over, proof after proof after proof, that what the government stole is false. So that's not much of a challenge. And I say, all right, activists, you take that message out there. We have given you all the cards you need to play. Go ahead and play them. And then if the people ask, well, what actually did happen, say, well, that's a real tough business. That's a whole more complicated matter to explain. We got a lot of people working on it, but they're trying to sort it all out, and there are lots of possibilities. The idea of fixating prematurely on thermite, when thermite, in my judgment now, cannot possibly explain the massive destruction of the World Trade Center. And I'd say, if you have any doubts about it, go to this website maintained by Judy Woods and Morgan Reynolds. They're not your enemies, my friends. They're not your enemies. They're trying to expose the full range of evidence that has to be explained. It was my looking at that totality of evidence, the massive destruction to 3, 4, 5, and 6, that convinced me there's no possible way thermite in Building 1 and 2, even if it were good as gold, could possibly explain all this. Now, if you want to hide your head in the sand like an ostrich, then go down the thermite hypothesis route, because if it's correct that the idea that thermite is both a good steel cutter as an incendiary and also a good pulverizer turns out to be theoretically incoherent, because one requires a directed form of energy and the other a multi-directed form of energy, then be my guest. I'm not about to accommodate the self-destruction of a truth movement on the basis of an hypothesis that has, in my opinion, no potential whatsoever to explain the full range of the data. That it might have been used to bring down the last few floors, 10 or 20 floors of the buildings, that's entirely possible. But if you want to understand what happened to 9/11, it's going to require more intellectual courage than just following along like a dog after its master wagging its tail. You got to look at the full range. Here's a guy who was actually doing research on Star Wars. He knows damn well the whole idea of full-spectrum dominance means weaponizing space. You cannot believe, open your imagination. These guys want to weaponize space. They want to control the world from space. You can't do it without putting weapons up there. That means there are weapons in space. And these weapons in space can take many different forms. They can involve directed energy of one type or another. They can be reflected from the ground one way or another. They can involve solar energy one way or another. Hey, did none of you even see the James Bond film Diamonds Are Forever talking about using solar energy in the form of a laser, a solar-motivated energized laser? I mean, look, they got trillions of dollars to play with. Bob Bowman is a good, decent man, but he's been out of the loop too long to even know what's actually going on today. I say this as a great fan of Bob Bowman, okay? And he can't think of any reason why we shouldn't consider these hypotheses so long as we make it clear that these are hypotheses we are considering. That's all I have ever said. We have to broaden our range to consider hypotheses. There's a group within 9/11 that wants to destroy it from inside out that has taken my words and twisted them and misrepresented my position, and there are an awful lot out there who have been willing to follow along with that. Well, I'm here to tell you what my position is, and by God, you just listen to this program again and again, and you'll get it clear. If you want to find out the truth, you got to look at a full range of alternative possible explanations. You got to take each of those possibilities as a cause and figure out what's the probability of the effects if that cause were operative. That's how you look for the most defensible, the most strongly supported by the evidence hypothesis. It requires consideration of alternative hypotheses. If thermite turns out to be the best available explanation, the only way it's possible to demonstrate that is to show that its power, its explanatory power for the evidence is greater than that of the alternatives. There's no possible way to do that without considering the alternatives. You have been led like a Pied Piper down a path to non-science. It is anti-scientific to not consider the full range of alternative hypotheses. Ask any scientist, they will tell you that. And yet you have a guy here who claims to be representing scientific method, and his scientific method says you take a hypothesis and you consider its consequences, as though you don't have to compare them with those of the available alternative. That's not science, my friends. That's a form of ideology that is disloyal to science. And you've got to understand this. We're not playing Parcheesi here. We're trying to figure out what happened in one of the great hoaxes of world history. The government of the United States has deliberately deceived the American people. It pulled off something very tricky on 9/11, and it's very difficult to figure out exactly what happened. And if we don't open our minds and our imagination to a full range of possibilities, there's no way we'll ever get there. And if we follow a Pied Piper down a path to self-destruction when it turns out that his hypothesis cannot possibly explain the full range of data, then what happens to the 9/11 truth movement if it's put all its cards and all its eggs in that one basket? So I'm here to say, don't do that. It's a colossal blunder. You've got to look at all the evidence. Confront the evidence. The destruction is massive, overwhelming. Confront the evidence, and then figure out which hypotheses are the most defensible. That's the method of science, and that's why I'm here to stand for truth, science, and the future of our country. And I say that as a philosopher who's committed to truth, as a philosopher of science who knows that science is the most reliable method for establishing what the truth is, and as a former Marine Corps officer who cares about my country. So I say, you all think about what you really want, why you really are involved in the 9/11 truth movement. If you want the truth, you have to apply science, and you have to be objective about it, and you have to consider the full range of alternative possible explanations, not rule some out because you think they sound loony. You have to look for the truth, and the truth can be difficult to find, and science, real science, can be messy. So I say, okay, activists, you can prove over and over and over again that what the government's told us is false. And scientists, those who researchers who really want to figure out what actually happened in addition, okay, that's tough, it's messy, but we're by God going to do our best. And I and others are going to do everything we can to aid and abet the search for truth about 9/11. And that's another reason why we're going to continue having many programs related to that issue on the Dynamic Duo. Thanks for listening.